and again, on the web at WBAI.org. A lot of information about the radio station in general and how you can contribute to this listener-sponsored, commercial-free community radio station. All of that is available on that website. I just had a brief conversation a few moments ago, about last week's LSB meeting. And since the next meeting of WBAI's local station board is tomorrow, let me take a few moments to let you know that where it will be, in hopes that if you do go, you'll find it informative and worth your while. The next meeting of the local station board will take place Wednesday, the 13th of August at 7 p.m. at the Judson Memorial Church Assembly Hall. Your participation will be greatly anticipated and appreciated. So that's 7 p.m. at the Judson Memorial Church Assembly Hall at 239 Thompson Street between West 3rd and Washington Square South. You can take the ACEF or V to West 4th. All right. We have a promotional card, so we'll play that as the afternoon wears on, so you can find your way to the local station board meeting if you've a mind. Now, you may have heard a couple of carts being played for the Liquid Sound Lounge boat cruise. It was to take place on the 8th, but it is now on the 22nd. DJ Jeannie Hopper and the host of the Liquid Sound Lounge throws down with guest DJ Victor Simonelli and Jay Rodriguez live on sax and flute. He joins in the mix. There was a little mix-up about the change date, and really sorry about that. For further information, you can go to the Liquid Sound Lounge website, liquidsoundlounge.com. All right, Zimbabwe is also in the news. My goodness, I heard this last night. Kirsty Coventry got a silver medal in the Olympic Games, and she her first medal for Zimbabwe, a silver medal in the women's 400 meters individual medley relay. And she went on to set a world record later on. Interesting, interesting. It's 1 o'clock in New York City. You are tuned to 99.5 FM, WBAI and WBAI.org. My name is Michael G. Haskins, your radio host and guide. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. That was quite a few guests last week, huh? So what's the idea of raising your consciousness? What's the idea of becoming a healthier, happier person? What do you get out of it? What's the idea of being introspective? Why would you even care about being introspective? Would you learn things about yourself? And would learning things about yourself help you get a better job? Well, here are at least two good reasons to work on raising your consciousness, which means being aware of yourself as opposed to not being aware of yourself. Number one, if you want to be happier. Number two, if you want the people around you to be happier. You see, a person who is not conscious, who is just acting by rote or by response or by instinct, not only are they not happy because they're trapped. They're trapped in their responses. They have no choices. And the people around them are miserable too. So you get angry, you yell at somebody. You get angry, you don't challenge yourself, you don't question yourself. If you took the time to learn about yourself, you will be happier because you will learn to spend your time more efficiently. You'll avoid activities, people, and situations which don't feel good, and you'll seek and create people, situations that do feel good. Just think about that statement. How many people in your life are there who don't make you, where you feel bad just being around them? And yet you keep them there. How many situations are there where you feel bad being in a situation, yet you keep it there? You'll learn to take responsibility for your emotions and your happiness. You'll attract more positive people. You'll enter into more meaningful relationships rather than superficial relationships because there will be a true you present. You begin to value your time more, and you get a great deal more accomplished. People around you would be happier if you were more intact, because they'll feel more accepted, more understood, more respected, more safe, and more significant. Actually, you've already begun raising your psychological consciousness by listening to this program, by tuning us in. And your knowledge that you've gained over the years and over the time of listening has already impacted on the people around you. I have a letter that hangs here from a child who sent me a letter saying, "Thank you for making my mommy a better mommy." So getting to understand yourself means you have to challenge certain things that are just seem unquestionable. And I want to take a second look at this thing about how we feel about other people. And a phrase that I saw used just lightly recently by someone who was kidding around, but I took it very seriously. It's called a compassion deficit disorder. Get that. You don't care how the other person feels. You just don't care. What's that about? Now, we would all, without an exception, no, that's not true without an exception. Most of us would agree that it would be ideal if we had great compassion in this world, right? I mean, you would say, hey, how great, we should all be compassionate. In the army, if you're going to go to war, they don't want you to be too compassionate. Because they want you to be at war. And if they want you to be at war, they want you not to care about the enemy that you may have to kill and confront. Now, that sounds automatically like a, oh, bad army thing. But in all truth, if we had somebody defending our shores and we were invaded, I would like to have soldiers who are not too compassionate if somebody was trying to hurt my family. You know, we want somebody who goes beyond it. But then again, you know, many of you are going to say, no, I don't want anybody to hurt anybody under any circumstances. So one of the questions we ask is, what gives you this testosterone? What gives you this compassion? And what doesn't give it to you? Why do certain people have it and other people don't? Why do women seem to have it so much more than men do? Well, a couple of connections. One connection has to do with testosterone. Testosterone, a very interesting thing. Now, we think testosterone is an aggressive kind of hormone. No, it's not. Testosterone doesn't create aggression. Testosterone increases aggression. If you inject somebody who is very meek with testosterone, they don't become violent. Testosterone exaggerates the aggression that's there. But testosterone is a fascinating substance because you take testosterone and you mix it with adrenaline, and then you get this all going. What do you have? You have a hunter. Hunters don't necessarily want to be compassionate. You're a hunter and you're an animal and you're chasing another animal and you want to go bring home, you know, you're going to bring home a deer for dinner, you know, and your baby cubs are all starving. The one thing you don't want to do right before the kill is to say, oh, I feel bad for the deer. Now, I wish you did, but then your babies would starve. In nature, compassion was kind of eliminated when there is a hunt. So the hunt and the drop in compassion go together. Would therefore we say that the people who have the least compassion are the people who are most on the hunt? A very interesting speculation. Think about politicians. Politicians may or may not have a lot of compassion, but most of them have fake compassion. Fake, you know, it looks a certain way. They give you those eyes and they look at you and they say, I really care about the melting on the ice caps and I care about the people. And most of it is, how am I going to get my votes? I can't look greedy. I'm not allowed to look greedy. The thing I have to do is look like I care. So most politicians assume a looking like I care or looking like I'm compassionate position because it's very popular. Because if your politician cares, then you'll vote for him. You certainly don't want to vote for somebody who doesn't show much compassion. So if we know that among politicians compassion is highly valued, then we know that they're going to fake compassion, that the politicians are going to fake being compassionate. So we have fake compassion. What is fake compassion? What's pseudo compassion look like? It looks like a salesman who wants to sell you shoes, or somebody who wants to sell you a car, or the people who sometimes work with this understanding, people who work in complaint departments. You know, nowadays there's a lot of internet customer relations things. And you could call, whereas in the past, if you would go to a department store and scream, they would kick you out. Now they have trained compassionate customer service. The telephone companies have it. Quite a few other people have it. Where you call and you start saying, you know, and now you didn't send me the bill on time and now you're doing it. And the person says, I really understand. Oh, I fully. And they give you this listening ear and you're shocked. Bill collectors have learned to be compassionate. You know, the bill collector, they're coming after you. Somebody turned over your bill to somebody. So they call you up. Oh, I really understand how difficult it is for you. And they're looking to just get one little piece of information from you. One additional piece, like your social security number, or where you live, or where you're working. And so they show you compassion and it makes you melt. Don't be a sucker for compassion. No, compassion is something that is felt, but it is also something that is well imitated. Come into my parlor, said the spider to the fly. So I want to explore a little more what makes it work and not work. Some people grow up and they are trained, especially to if you have many children in the family, if you have sisters and brothers, you're trained to be considerate by a certain toxic word. Now, here comes the word. Are you ready for the single most accusatory evil thing that you could do? The word is selfish. Yes, don't be selfish. Don't be selfish. You shouldn't be selfish. Now, how would a child of 3 or 4 years old know what selfish is? Gee, I'm taking care of myself. Gee, my back hurts. Gee, I got to change my diaper. I'm crying. Imagine a baby crying in a crib and a parent walking in and saying, don't be selfish. We have to sleep. right? Of course, that doesn't make sense. But in the equivalent of it to many children, they get that from their parents. We want you to be considerate of others. Now, considerate of others and you'll be punished if you're not considerate of others is not compassion. Nope, that means just being considerate of others. Because it's not a felt sense that you have. You don't care that your parents are sleeping. You just know you're going to get punished if they don't sleep. So you become paranoid. You become worried. You become acutely diligent. You're looking all the time, am I going to do something that's going to make somebody upset? The people who go around being afraid to upset people and therefore they look like the most giving people in the world, they're not compassionate. They're just operators. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. We'll be taking your calls a little later, too. So let's look at the people who are overtly non-compassionate. Dispassionate. Would that be the opposite of compassionate? What is compassion? Compassion is the ability to feel others' feelings with a wish to make things better. It's a sympathetic consciousness of others' distress. It's selflessly understanding, meaning putting yourself aside. Not the opposite of selfish is not selfless, right? Selfish is just a word that's used as a way of controlling children. So compassion is something you feel, you know, it's like you get it in your gut. You get it. It's such a, you have it for your children mostly. Most of you know that. Most of you know it if you live with somebody who's in a great amount of pain. You know, you could feel compassion for them. Compassion is a felt experience, but should you have it? And what about the people who don't? So you have a bunch of guys sitting around, and they may be talking about their conquering women, you know, and they may be talking about some of their teenage testosteronic escapades. And I met this girl, and she said, do you love me? And I said, of course I love you. And then I had sex with her, and then I gave her the wrong phone number. Horrible thing, we think. Horrible, horrible thing. Oh, how could you do that to somebody? How wrong of you to do that of somebody. But in the way nature built you. Nature built you that when you're on the hunt sexually as a male, you ignore all things that get in your way. If you're a mountain lion, if you're a lion who's going after a female lion who's in estrus, she smacks you in the face, she hits you over the head, she tells you to go out and get a pastrami sandwich. She does everything. And you just keep going on the trail. You keep going after it because nature built you this way. Because nature said, you have got to spill those seeds and you got to make babies. Don't let anything get in your way. So nature made the mind of somebody who is trying to mate completely blind to all other things. So we read about rape, and we read about date rape, and we read about what happens that men go through. These are guys who have no consciousness whatsoever, and yes, they will be punished for following it. And for 5 minutes of following through on some passion that you couldn't stop, a man could spend the rest of his life in jail, and he could harm a woman, you know, so that she suffers for the rest of her life for 5 minutes of this biological imperative that's kind of going through your veins, unless you have something else, unless you have a loving family who is in some way demonstrating to you that consideration is important. So the people who lack compassion are being brought about by people who lack compassion. Right? So let's look at our presidents. Right? Is the son of a president who lacks compassion, who becomes president, is he going to be any more compassionate than his father was? Of course not. Less so. How could you be somebody who is in charge of a country and not have compassion? Well, nowadays, you know, we're all looking and we see compassion being thrown at us among one of the candidates. And we're saying, wow, what a compassionate being that is. And so we're feeling very moved. We felt very moved whenever we see compassionate politicians, especially when we've lost all that we've lost because we've seen the person who is non-compassionate. Well, watch out. I mean, just remember, if you're a politician, compassion is a learned behavior, a thing you do. You got to watch behind it. Let's see how that all manifests. So compassion. So what about you, my friends? Have you ever feel like you're good or bad with it? You know, the Buddhists, very, very big on compassion. The definition of the Buddhists is wanting others to be free of suffering. This compassion happens, according to the Buddhist, when one feels sorry with someone and one feels an urge to help. The near enemy is pity. You have to be careful for pity, according to the Buddhists, which keeps others at a distance and does not urge one to help. The opposite is wanting others to suffer. That's the opposite of compassion, or cruelty, a result which one needs to avoid. And another one that one needs to avoid is sentimentality. According to the Buddhists, you shouldn't pity somebody. You shouldn't be cruel. And you shouldn't be sentimental. Nope, sentimentality. Compassion thus refers to an unselfish, detached emotion, which gives one a sense of urgency in wanting to help others. From a Buddhist perspective, helping others to reduce their physical or mental suffering is very good. But the ultimate goal is to extinguish all suffering. Eventually, I mean, that's the goal in the planet, you know, however you're going to do that. And they do that through rebirth. That's another issue. One person said compassion is an act of courage. Well, it is if you're on the border. Okay, but let's say if you're on the border of not knowing whether you should be compassionate or not. You see a homeless person, you know, you're in a hurry. Compassion. Is it there? Is it not there? Are you wrong for not paying attention? So if you took it out of your mind whether you're wrong or right to be compassionate with somebody, let's look at the thing itself and you with it. It is okay by me if you don't feel compassion. It really is. It's okay. You may have been trained not to be that way. And I could see that you didn't have that in your background. So I don't expect it. Here's one from Deepak Chopra. He did a very interesting thing. Listen to this.
C is for compassion. I will see a stranger today through the eyes of compassion. I will remind myself that this stranger has parents and people who love her, just like me. I will remind myself that this stranger has moments of joy just like me. I will remind myself that this stranger has moments of anguish and suffering just like me. I will remind myself that this stranger will one day grow old just like me. I will remind myself that this stranger will go through the cycles of illness and recovery, just like me. I will remind myself that this stranger will one day die, just like me. Through the eyes of compassion, I will know this stranger not as a stranger anymore, but as a living soul, just like me.
Pretty, isn't it? The message is, I am compassionate because I compare you to me. I am compassionate to you because, in effect, I am taking care of myself when I take care of you. That's Deepak Chopra's interpretation of compassion. Want to listen to it again and hear that again?
C is for compassion. I will see a stranger today through the eyes of compassion. I will remind myself that this stranger has parents and people who love her, just like me.
And that's where the problem becomes. The problem becomes in the just like me. You know, compassion is when you could really separate yourself from someone else and see their suffering and not be connected to them. You objectively look at them and care for them. That's one form. Then there's the other form. There's the Deepak way. You know, the Deepak way is to say to yourself, oh, I care about you because there but for the grace of God go I. You know, there or, you know, because for the grace of Buddha go I. You know, you could do it that way. You could have that kind of feeling. I wish people had more compassion for each other. I wish they do. But I have compassion, great compassion, for the people who don't have any at all. If you don't have any at all, I understand. Psychopaths. We'll call this the compassion deficit disorder. A psychopath, they have great feelings for people. They have great love, great attachment. They just don't have remorse, guilt, or compassion. They think whatever is right, and I will determine what is right, and they will do what is right accordingly. And they are not inhibited by caring about other people. You must have had this in your life a number of times. There must have been a number of times when you have been dispassionate. You know, not dispassionate, that's the wrong word. Non-compassionate. Right? And there are times that you wish now, if you look back, you could have paid attention. Do you have any of that in your mind? Do you think about that at all? Do you have any regrets about how you've treated people? Wouldn't it be nice if we could go back? This is one of the exercises in a 12-step program. It's called Making Amends. And part of the Making Amends is to go back over time and to make a list of all the people you think you have hurt with your addiction. Now, let's say your addiction is just rage, or let's say your addiction is sexuality, or, you know, not just alcohol or something like that. The idea is to go back and make a list of all the people in your life that you think you have hurt by your thoughtlessness. It's okay to be thoughtless. It's okay to be selfish. It's okay to feel like you're desperate and the only thing in the world you can take care of is yourself. It's okay. That's all right. I understand. You're a starving kid. You know, you're somebody who's like has no parents. You know, you're lost on this planet. You don't have anybody loving you. You act in selfish ways. Okay, I see it. So the other day, somebody tried to steal something from me, and I caught it, and I stopped it from happening. And he was so terrified of the punishment I was going to bring to bear on him. I didn't want him to do it again, you know, but I didn't feel angry just because he tried to steal something from me. It's what he does. It's the way he lives. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So I would be curious as to take a look with you, and I would like to examine your sense of places where you wish you had been compassionate. Now, I guess that's equivalent of guilt, where you feel guilty. But let's say you removed it from intense guilt and you just looked at it as some kind of a feeling. You said, I wish I had treated them better. Make a list right now. Go ahead, take a piece of paper. Do it. And think of the number of people in your life, starting when you were a kid, that you wish you could undo something you did. Made fun of somebody, laughed at somebody, treated somebody badly, was greedy about somebody, took somebody to, exploited somebody in some way. Think about it. What I'd like you to do is think about it, and then when we come back from our break, which is going to be in just 2 minutes, we will take your telephone calls at 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI. We're talking about compassion, and we're talking about compassion with great compassion, which includes compassion for people who don't feel compassion. Do you have a compassion deficit disorder? It's okay with me. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. I'd like to look at it. I had a man who came in to see me, and he said he gets very angry. He's a very compassionate man, except when it comes to cops. I said, why with cops? He said, because cops are always crooked, and they're always abusive. And I said, just like your father. Because if your compassion stops somewhere, then you don't have it. You know what I mean? It can't be limited. And people who have trouble with authority lose their sense of compassion, because I believe every one of you, everybody at WBAI, should have, if possible, it would be ideal if you could have compassion for every Republican out there. Yes, I want you to understand, why did people vote and why do people continue to vote to favor the war? Why do they? Why is there a group of people somewhere down south wearing white sheets over their head, you know, and feeling the way they feel? Why is it? Can you feel compassion for that? Well, unfortunately, I do. Because when I see it, I see the illness. I see the sickness. I see how damaged these people are, and I see the damage they do. So this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I know we're opening the phones because I would love to take your calls today, 212-209-2900. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, a little music, some very pretty music about compassion, and then I'll be right back.
We are Soweto Gospel Choir. You are listening to BAI New York, BAI New York, San Bonani.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas, heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and of
Stand
course,
by,
your
Armand.
Comments, questions, and observations.
Here we go.
That's Talk
Three,
Back right here
two,
on WBAI
one,
New York.
Go.
Buddhas of the past, present, and future, what is right and what is wrong? They are drunk with demonic delusions. Let the might of your compassion arise to bring a quick end to the flowing stream of the blood and tears. In an ocean of joy, Buddha of compassion, please hear my anguish words of truth. Parla ciò di te di po, don la chai. Parla ciò di te di po. Words of truth. Buddha of compassion, please hear my anguished words of truth.
That's the compassionate Buddha from Asian Heart. And this is Armando Mill with you at the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, bringing you ideas, concepts, guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today we're talking about compassion and taking your calls. I was struck in listening to the opening ceremony for the games at the amount, the overwhelming, overflowing, compassionate message that was effusing through the words and the behaviors and this showing this, we love you all and we care so much about you through this process where I saw, 2,000 people at a time hypnotized in some hypnagogic state where they were just doing a ritual of where they dare not shame themselves. Shame would be if you did something wrong. And it's like the idea of being sold compassion as a way of grabbing your heart. And it's a funny thing when somebody says the word compassion on TV, then the commentator has to be compassionate. And then everybody has to be compassionate. It's like nobody could stand up and say, wait a minute, this is pretty schmaltzy. You know what I mean? This may not all be as it seems. So we're suckers for compassion. Compassion is something where people almost don't know you have it. You never announce how much of it you have. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. You're on the air. I want to hear about you and your own compassionate being. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
I find most interesting the ability or inability to be compassionate with myself. And there seems to be a real connection between how much I'm able to be compassionate with myself and my ability or inability to be compassionate with other people.
And there's a beautiful insight for you, if I ever heard one. That's kind of perfect. That was what would usually take about 10 months of therapy to get to, Because what you're saying is very important. In what way are you harsh on yourself?
Well, I was married and stayed married with a woman who I was really not happy with. And in some ways, I wasn't able to be truthful and with that woman and share my feelings of being unhappy in a relationship, not just with isolated incidences or issues that seemed to be that were on the surface. There was an underlying discontent of being married with this person. I didn't really, I felt I married out of obligation, out of choice. And so it was very confused, since on the one hand, I didn't really allow myself to own that I made the wrong decision. And so this went on and on and on. And it was a strange mixture of not allowing myself to feel the right to say no, this is not the right relationship and the right person for me. And
so what you were missing in this story was there was a child inside you who was not being nurtured. There was a kid inside you who was being ignored. You weren't getting your needs met. The child wasn't getting their needs met, and you were not compassionate towards that child. You couldn't see that child and say, oh, kitty, I understand you need something better than this. And it took you a while to extricate yourself. And during the time while you're ignoring your inner self and your inner needs, you find it very difficult to be aware of and be attentive to the inner needs of other people.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the things about other people that you'll find the most harsh and to have the greatest difficulty with will be the things that you have difficulty with inside yourself. Like a lot of people judge people who are violent. And that's because they're afraid of their own violence. A lot of people judge people who are very sexual. That's because they're afraid of their own sexuality. See, so part of what you're saying, which is, I think, beautiful, which is that you have this kind of internal awareness that kind of limits your ability to be consciously caring for other people.
Mm.
That's great. What's your name?
Oliver.
Oliver, that's terrific insight. I'm really amazed you've gotten to that. So you got out of that relationship?
Yeah, it was her who finally broke it up. So, you know, that I didn't get to the point where I could, where I felt empowered and came to this consciousness and acted upon it. It's in retrospect that I realized that that I was missing a connection to myself.
Well, I'll tell you something, Oliver. When one person breaks up a relationship, I'm always convinced that both people broke it up. Do you know what I mean? Even though she may be in the one to take the actual step, whatever it was that you were doing was feeding this action of hers. So usually when people divorce, it's both people divorcing, even though one seems to want the divorce. Even though when people separate, it's usually both people who want the separation in some way or who create the separation. So thank you very much for calling in, Oliver. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Sure. 212-209-2900. Very important point. If you're not kind to yourself, how are you going to be kind to other people? Well, that's not true. There are people I know who can nurture others but cannot nurture themselves. I've seen that many times. There are people who are lousy with themselves but great with other people. One wonders about the level of compassion, because sometimes you seem to be putting it outside of yourself. But I think you can love others without loving yourself. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, let's take another call.
Yeah, hi, Armand.
Yes.
Hi, it's Tony from the Bronx.
Hello, Tony from the Bronx.
I always call you. I love every time your music is just, it's like an amazing connection with your music.
Yeah, kind of.
I love everything you put on.
I search it out and search it out for every program.
Let me tell you, it's amazing. It really is. Very appropriate. You know what I wanted to share was, I think for me, at this point in my life, probably the biggest insight, epiphany, whatever you want to call it, that I've ever experienced, has been the separation of compassion and pity. I've always confused that with myself, you know, just for myself. I'm not saying I'm right or wrong, just for me, where I got stuck in areas self-pitying myself, and, you know, where the difference between self-pity and compassion, the line was blurred, sort of.
Sure. What does self-pity look like? Self-pity looks like...
Well, for me, what self-pity looks like is when you have a situation and you get stuck there and you wallow in the mire, so to speak, as opposed to trying to resolve it if you can, trying to get out of it if you can, and making an effort, whether you're successful or not, you know, it's being responsible for yourself, your life, and your actions. So that sounds like, to me, the opposite of self-pity. And that line between compassion for others and for myself was always blurred, where I crossed over to more self-pity, which was not as productive.
And pity for other people, too.
Absolutely.
Is not so productive.
And, absolutely. I was like one of those guys that just want to save the world, you know?
Mm-hmm. I understand.
And as a result, having been able to clear that and see that clearly, I'm able to see when I go there and I catch myself, you know, instead of being stuck in self-pity for 6 months, it could be now an hour or 2 hours or 3 days, as opposed to, you know, 6 months or even a year, or blaming others, you know?
Okay, so let me ask you a question, Tony.
Tony, in your pitying compassion itself, up in the Bronx, do you know any policemen who are kind of really brutal, nasty?
You know what, I think anywhere, and that's a difficult job, but I'm sure they're all over the place. I think, you know, people in positions of power abuse it and take it out on the people that are less powerful.
So when you see that person doing that, do you feel compassion for the guy who is abusing his power?
I actually feel compassion for both of them.
Good.
I do.
You got it.
I do.
You got it. That's the idea. You know? Yeah, because almost everybody I know would say, no, how could you feel compassion for somebody who's abusive? Well, geez, I feel the most compassion for somebody who's abusive. Not the most, but it's like, poor guy. Holy cow, nobody loves him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's just an amazing thing. And you know, I heard this saying, and it stuck with me for 8 years, where self-pity one of the worst afflictions that you could have is self-pity, because it's paralyzing. You know, and that's always helped me.
Thanks a lot for calling in, Tony. Nice to hear from you again. Yes. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello.
Hi there. You're on the air.
Hello. This is Lori Armand.
Hi, Lori.
I've spoken to you before. This is Lori of Long Island.
Lori of Long Island.
Yes. I'm calling about today's topic. You always have a topic that touches a chord with me in some way. You know, I was brought up to have compassion. Yes, you know, my parents have taught me it, but they have questioned and invalidated times when I have felt compassion. You know, like if I feel pity for somebody else down the block or anybody else, and, you know, they'll always ask me the question, what did that have to do with you?
Right. So they were kind of training you to be sensitive to who? Who did they want?
Only to people that I was very involved with in my life. Like if I felt sad about a celebrity dying or going through, and it was a favorite, I believe that you should never invalidate anybody's compassion, no matter how far away the person is to their life. You know, like if I saw a dog down the block being disciplined too harshly, and I came to my parents sad about it, it was like, what did it have to do with you?
Now your parents are asking a very interesting question. What does it have to do with you? And, you know, at that point with your parents, you don't have the wherewithal to say, don't you understand? I am that dog. Don't you understand?
Okay, so who's right, me or them? I don't know.
You see, the point of it is, your poor parents are blind.
Right.
They're trapped. You have options. I have compassion for both of you.
A couple of years ago, I was sad when my favorite singer from Nirvana, Kurt Cobain, shot himself.
Yeah.
And I told my mother about it. I let my mother in on it. And I even told her that I was sorry for telling her, because she was like, what are you, 14 years old? What was he, your boyfriend? And I said, no. I had to make an excuse to say that I was freaked out about everything else in my life anyway at the time.
I got you. Thanks.
Just one example.
Thanks for calling in, as usual. Always nice to hear from you.
Okay, have a good day. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. 212-209. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. So compassion is quite an interesting issue, don't you think? Now, what happens when you get angry at somebody? What happens when you get angry at someone and you're expressing your anger at someone, and you see that they are crumbling under your expression of your anger? What happens? Do you at that point find yourself pulling back, holding back? Or do you want to drive the message home? Did you ever hear that? I mean, do you ever see when you're getting mad at somebody and they start to cry or something? What happens to you at that point?
Have a call.
Let's take another call. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon. Hi, Armand. This is Anne Marie. I'm actually driving. I'm going to pull over.
Good.
Yeah, I was listening to the gentleman, the first caller, and that was basically me, you know, stuck in a marriage that I was in for 21 years and had so much compassion for everybody else except for myself.
Well, a lot of people are like that, Anne-Marie. Were you brought up that way?
Yes.
Were you brought up to take care of everybody around you?
Everybody else, yes.
And so what eventually happened?
Well, you know, that inner child you talked about was screaming at me. I mean, it was such an intense thing. I would go back and forth, and finally I realized that I was going to either end up in a mental institution or some other place if I don't say what was going on, because I was in so much pain from not being able to say, wait a minute, you know, I am not happy. You know, I am taking care of you, and nobody's given anything to me. And I just had to say it slowly. It wasn't something that came easy. Very slowly said it. You know, I am not happy. I think I want out of this marriage.
And did you get out of the marriage, Anne-Marie?
I am still in the marriage, but right now we're separated.
Uh-huh.
Right now we're separated.
What's the difference? Tell me what the difference is being separated.
Well, the difference is right now is acknowledging to myself that this marriage is not working, you know, and on the process of getting a divorce.
And if you're in the process of getting a divorce, what do you anticipate? What are you looking forward to?
Well, you know, I'm actually looking forward to my life, being able to say, you know, to myself and to everybody else for that matter, this, because I think everybody else knew that this marriage wasn't the marriage for me, but I was in such a denial because, again, I was so brought up to believe that, you know what, you get into this marriage, this is what you signed up for, you're going to take care of everybody else, your kids, your husband, and you go by the wayside.
And not you.
And for not me, and I tell you.
Well, what was it, Anne-Marie, that brought you to the point where you said to yourself, I don't want to go by the wayside? What is the incident that happened? What was the thing that happened that you said, that's it, I've had enough?
Well, my husband and I, we had made vacation plans to go away. And 2 days before we go away, he came home and said to me, I can't go on vacation with you. After 6 months of planning. And at that point, I realized that this man really didn't have it in him to give it to me, because the truth is that he really didn't know how to love. And I was the one facilitating this marriage for 21 years, saving it. Every time something go wrong, I would save it because I thought that was my job.
So now that you've kind of told him you want out of the marriage.
Yes, we've talked about it, yes.
And what's happened on his side? Is he holding on, or is
he keeps holding on. I mean, slowly keep holding on, but I keep forcing it because I realize that he is not the person that's going to save it, that's going to save me or him, for that matter.
You see, the problem, Anne-Marie, is this. When somebody like you, who is a giver, and you give undyingly all the time, you take on the full responsibility for the love portion of the relationship. So you hold the relationship together. You keep it together. You try to make it work. You're doing all the job. Many women and men listening out there right now will identify with this. At one point, your mate just becomes completely passive, and they become like a wet rag, and you're just doing everything you can to try to get them, you know, to be responsive to you in some way.
That was my marriage for 21 years.
Now, when that happens, the problem with it is, when that happens, the mate doesn't get a chance to even discover what they want, because you're doing it so much. So a lot of people who are overwhelmingly caring and trying to get their mates to be sexually responsive or loving responsive or responsible, if they backed off, they'd get a chance to see what their mate really has to offer. So I recommend to many people, back off.
And that's what I had to do. I had to go to him. This was 4 years ago, believe it or not. And I said, you know what? I've tried everything in my power to make it work. Now I'm going to let go. And if you really want this marriage, then you're going to fight for it. And he didn't. And
he doesn't have to fight for it, because, you see, if it's an issue of fight for it, then it becomes more of your energy.
Right.
It really has to be something that evolves, something that comes up out of the passion. You know, when so in your next relationship, Anne-Marie, you got to back off. You got to give less and let it eventually just come to you.
Absolutely.
Have you had any relationships since?
No. These things take time for me.
What did you say? This is difficult.
I said they take time. These things take time.
You said seven.
I'm just discovering myself, actually. I'm just trying to be a better person to myself and to my two kids.
I just heard something in you that sounded like you don't even want to entertain the thought of having someone else close to you.
Actually, no. You know, I actually would love to entertain it, but I know now what I need to do for myself first. You know,
Find yourself before you bring that self into another relationship.
Yes, I need to better the self first before the self can be into another situation that is loving and caring and knowing what it's all about for myself, you know, and knowing if it doesn't work, when to just step aside.
Anne-Marie, thank you very much for calling in. You're beautiful. Thank you,
Armand.
Okay, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I'm going to have to be going. I will be back with you on tomorrow at 1 p.m. with more interesting stuff. If you want to hear today's program or you want to listen to reruns of past programs, you could go to thepositivemind.com. Thepositivemind.com. Also email me through that, thepositivemind.com.
Listener-sponsored, commercial-free, community radio, WGN.